Gospel of Matthew more through this season right now, looking at these verses, because Matthew wrote as a Jew to Jews. The only two records of the birth of Christ in your Bible was written by Matthew and then by Luke, Matthew being a Jew and Luke being a Gentile. And here we have a perspective from a Jewish perspective of the birth of Christ. You'll read things in Matthew that you don't find in any of the other gospel writers, because you remember we dealt with the four gospel writers are like four portraits. And if I come to you and talk about a person in your family, everyone that sees that person will see them from a different vantage point, whether it be a father or a son, or whether it be a cousin or a friend or a co-worker. Everyone sees them differently. And that's how that we're looking at it. We're looking at it through the royal lineage of Jesus Christ. And he deals with things since he deals with the king that is come, that will eventually establish a kingdom. For the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And the only reason the kingdom wasn't established is because they rejected their king. But that same Jesus that came the first time is coming again. We know that. And here is a strange thought. We not only dealt with him in the gospel, but then in the genealogy. And how all of the genealogies were destroyed by the man that we're talking about today, Herod. And the reason Herod destroyed the genealogies is because they asked the question that pierced his heart when they said, "Where is he that is born the King of the Jews?" Because Herod could not have been born King of the Jews. He had the title King of the Jews, but he could not have been King of the Jews because he was half Edomite. He didn't have a royal bloodline. He was half Jewish and half Edomite, so he could not be the king of the Jews as the Bible teaches and as their religion teaches, because it was impossible. Kings are not elected. They are placed by bloodline. They are royal by their bloodline. And he couldn't meet that. So what he decided to do was destroy all the genealogies. What genealogies was not destroyed, they were destroyed then in 70 AD under Titus. When Titus came in, overthrew Jerusalem, the remaining records were destroyed. The only known record that exists today, if someone would rise up today and say, "I've got the royal lineage, I can claim myself to be the Messiah," it's an impossibility, because the only lineages that survived was in Matthew and Luke, and Matthew's writing is the only royal lineage that we have. That's the reason why the genealogies is different between Luke and between Matthew. Luke, being a Gentile, looks at Jesus as a man, the Son of Man, and Matthew looks at him proving that he's the Messiah. And he's saying he's got the legal right to be your king. And by the way, he does have the legal right to be our king. And he has the royal bloodline. And if you're a Christian today, "For as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God," or the children of God. That means I'm a child of the king because of what Christ has done. But let's read a few verses, and I'll give you a strange thought that God spoke to my heart about. And I want to deal with this today, that I think maybe it will help some individuals that's going through some things, even right here in the church. Beginning with verse 1 of chapter 2. "Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came," what's the next two words? "Wise men from," where were they from? "The east to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him.' And when Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea.'" Notice the next phrase. "For thus it is" what? "Written by the prophet, 'And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah.'" In other words, they were always looked down as the smallest prince, but he said, "You're not, you're the largest." They were the largest in number, first to lead in praise. And now here God's given this little town that was the least of Judah's villages the greatest honor. "For out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people. And then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem. Stop right there. Where's the answer to his question? What time did the star appear? You don't have it, do you? It's not there. I'm telling you, you don't want to miss Wednesday night if the Lord tarries his coming. If he comes, I'm going to be with him. It don't matter. But until then, you don't want to miss Wednesday night. Enough said on that. And when then he had sent them to Jerusalem, he said, go and search for the young child. Verse 8. When you found him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him also. And when they had heard the king, they departed. Now notice the next phrase. And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. Focus in on those last two verses for just a moment. We call them wise men. Most people say there's three, just based on the three gifts. It has, through history and legend, we've now got them named. I don't know where they got their names, because their names is not biblical. But I'm not here to argue that point. If you believe you know their names, then God bless you. But yet the Bible doesn't say what their names are. It doesn't even say there's three. There could have been more than three. They're not even named kings in the Bible. They're named wise men. These wise men are believed to be out of religion. I've heard it taught that they came from Babylon, and I've even made reference to that, where Daniel was led into captivity. That's where they learned this. We don't know exactly where they were from. Spurgeon even said they could have been as far away as what is now modern day China. I don't know. We just know they're from the East. And we also know these wise men from the East somehow had knowledge that Jesus was going to be born in Judah, in Jerusalem. And they see this star. They had a study of the stars, apparently. They see the star and they start the journey. Wow, that must have been an amazing star. Really? I mean, think about it. We don't know. And the reason I stress that about it's not in your Bible, you know, what time it appeared, because we would know exactly where they were from, basically, by the time it would have taken them to travel. There's an assumption then that comes from that. I'll deal with that on Wednesday night. But the point is this. They see the star and they start the journey. We don't know how much of the Bible they knew. We don't know the basis even of how they knew. They knew a king was born, the king of the Jews. They knew that. They knew that from one star. We don't know what else they knew, but they knew that. You'll never find the king until you look for him. You've got to start the journey somewhere, someplace, somehow. You've got to start. There has to come a point in your life where you finally reach that point where that you say, listen, I want Jesus more than anything. And you have to start that journey. They start the journey. We don't know how long they travel. And some people say, well, that star led them all the way. No, that's not what the Bible teaches. Oh no, the star stopped shining. Because after they meet with Herod, then they're filled with exceeding great joy, because then when they see the star the second time, it leads them and stands over where the child is at. But there was a period of time they didn't know. That's why they were asking, where is he born king of the Jews? They had seen his star when they were in the east. They started the journey. But the star had to stop shining. Now here's my question for you this morning. What do you do when the star stops shining? I mean, I wish that I was thrilled every day when I got up and say, I've got a clear-cut sign of what I'm supposed to do today. My typical morning, Candy and I, she'd say, what's your plans today? I say, I don't have a clue. And that's the truth. I'm not saying that to be a smart. I can start my day off and think, whew, I've got this under control today, and I'm going to be able to do it all. By the end of the day, there could be two or three deaths. There could be people that with extreme sickness. There could be people with problems. There could be all types of needs that come about. I really don't know from sunrise to sunset what a day holds. And I wish I could get up every morning and say, that's it. All I know is that there was a day in my life when I started the journey. And I can also promise you this, there'll be days in your life where that the stars will stop shining. And what do you do when the stars stop shining? What are you going to do when there's not that thrill, or there's not that overwhelming feeling, or there's not that great pulling of desire? What do you do in that hour? I think you've got to accept some things if you're going to journey in this Christian journey. One thing is the star doesn't always shine. But that doesn't mean that He's any less God when the star's not shining. The same God that made the star shine said there'll be times in your life where the star may stop shining. There's a lot of things in life you thought you'd do. You planned a lot of things you hoped would come through. But in reality, when you started on the journey, a lot of it, if you would be brutally honest as a Christian today, if you've been on this journey very long, there's probably a lot of things that has happened that didn't turn out one way at all like you thought it would happen. You thought that you had the right direction. You thought you had the right plans, and it's not wrong to do that. You started a certain way, but suddenly the stars stopped shining. It's a great day when Abraham found out they're going to have a child. How'd they know they were going to have a child? Because God said, I'm going to make you a great nation, and they'll not be able to number your seed. If they can count the stars of the heavens, they'll be able to count your seed. He said, you'll not know the number of your seed. There's only one problem. He's 100, and now his wife is 90, and the stars stop shining. How can you have a seed in a great nation if you have no children? They tried to work it out themselves, but that wasn't right. But by the way, that didn't mean that it was over. Joseph, he's a dreamer. Everything he dreams, he starts out. The next thing you know, his brethren hate him. They'd love to have killed him, but instead, he's sold into slavery. He finally gets to a place where he's brought up in the palace and brought up to prominence. And what happens? He's falsely accused and he's thrown in prison. He had a dream. What happened? God gave him a dream. Now he's in prison. And those that have promised him in prison, they wouldn't forget it. They forgot him. Stars don't always shine. Well, what do you do when the stars stop shining? Well, you do what they do. When stars stop shining, God still expects us to be faithful. You keep going. I don't get up on Sunday morning and ask myself, how do I feel? Do I feel like going to church today? If you ask how you feel, I'll guarantee you, you have an enemy of your soul that you'll feel worse every day at church time than any other day of the week. It'll just happen. We don't go by our feeling. But one thing we do know is that we can remain faithful in all things. And when we remain faithful in all things, God says, what gives us the exact advice what to do. When you don't have the star in front of you, do the best you can and go on what you know. Now someone said, well, this star led them all the way all the time and never left them. Well, it was a poor guide. Because they wound up in Jerusalem. And Bethlehem's 5 to 6 miles away. Well, let me put it this way. How would you like to buy a new phone and pay what you pay for that phone? And on that phone, it has a map. And you speak into that map and tell that phone where you want to go. And that phone, it gives you good directions, but you wind up 5 miles away. Not a very good guide, is it? The truth of the matter is, the star stopped shining and all they knew, if he was born king of the Jews, where's the headquarters of the Jews? Where's the capital of the Jews? In his eyes and in the eyes of these others, they said that would be Jerusalem. So they went to Jerusalem. That's the place to find the king of the Jews. They did the best they could. But they were still doing something. You don't always know, folks. You don't always know. I don't care how spiritual you are, you don't always know. I was involved in 3 or 4 services this week for people that have passed. 2 of the families are here today. Both of them would probably tell you life never turned out anything at all like they thought. But that doesn't mean they didn't have a good life. What do you do now? What do you do, Hank? Rosie's gone. She's gone on to be with the Lord. You don't stop. You do what you know. Albert, you do what you know. What do you know? Love the Lord. Serve the Lord. Be faithful. Trust the Lord. I don't always feel good and I don't always feel like going, but I do what I know to do. I don't always feel like praying, but I know I'm supposed to pray. I don't always feel like giving, but I know I'm supposed to give. Sometimes you're probably not going to like this. You may not always feel like loving people, but you know you're supposed to. You do what you know. And then when you do what you know, here's the point of it all. Herod said, get the scribes. And they said, in verse 5, for it is written by the prophet. Oh, I love this. You may not always have a star, but you've always got a book. When you don't have a star, you got a book. When I don't feel saved, I'm glad I got a book that tells me I am saved. When I don't feel joy, I'm glad I've got a book that tells me joy cometh in the morning. When I don't like to face death, I'm glad I've got a book that tells me death is not the end, but Jesus conquered death, hell, and the grave. I'm glad when I face the enemy and I don't feel strong enough to fight it, I've got a book that says greater is he that's in you than he that is in the world. They didn't have a star, but they had a book. And when they turned to the book told them, Bethlehem. So he said, when you find him, come and tell me. So they leave. And I like this. You've always got the book. You don't always have the star to shine. But when they went the way of the book, the star will shine again. Stars will shine one more time. And when they saw the star again, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. They thought, how am I going to find him in Bethlehem this time of year? And the reason people, how will I find him? But the star reappeared to them and their heart was overflowing with joy. You may not feel happy today, but I promise you, stay with the book. You'll feel happy again. You do what the book says, stars will shine again. There was a man named Harry Lauder that told the story of a father and son that was in one of the great American cities during wartime. And the dad was walking with the boy down to the streets of that city. And as they walked through the streets, the little boy was amazed. He saw all of these stars in the windows of houses. It was wartime in our nation. And he said, "Daddy, what's those stars?" And he said, "Son, those are called service stars." A lot of you younger folks, you don't know about service stars. As a boy growing up, we used to have gold star mothers. Do you know what a gold star mother is? It's a mother whose child had served this country and died fighting for this country. They'd place a gold star up. We'd have Sundays that we honored gold star mothers. And he would tell him, say, "Those are homes of people that they've given their son in service." And oftentimes, that son died on the battlefield during that wartime. That child died on the battlefield. And then he was so amazed because some windows would have 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 stars, service stars. He said they walked along and every time he'd see those, he'd clap and he was so excited he'd see those stars. And then finally, there was a space where they'd torn down some houses. And the alley there beside of it, it was dark. It was a dark night. And when they got in the darkness on the street, he looked up and against the black velvet of the night, the evening star was shining bright. And the little boy stood and clapped and his dad said, "Son, what are you clapping about?" And he said, "Look, look, God's got a star in his window. He must have given his son in service." And he did. One darkened night in Judea, after 400 years of not hearing from a prophet, God hung a new star in the heavens and said, "Brand new is born this day in the city of David, a Savior, which is Christ the Lord." The earth rejoiced. The heavens came down. The angels praised God. The shepherds praised God. The wise men, they worshiped Him. That's why I get excited at Christmas. It's because God hung a new star. I can go by the book, but I'm glad God still hang stars for us. A young man was in a terrible accident. And in that automobile accident, they met with the family and said, "We regret to tell you we're going to have to amputate his left arm," just a little boy. The parents said, "Can't you save his arm?" "No, we can't save his arm. We have to choose. Save his life or save his arm." They said, "Save his life." The little boy went into deep depression, naturally so, just as a child, losing his arm. And finally, one day, his dad got the idea to enroll him in a judo class. And the mother said, "That's ridiculous. He only has one arm." The dad said, "I don't care. I just feel so strongly about enrolling him in a judo class." And they did. And he started through his instruction and finally got to where they were specializing in different moves. And his instructor was trying to teach him. And he said, "You're different than all the other students." He said, "I'm only going to teach you one move." And he taught him one move, but he taught him how to do it well. He said, "You can pin your opponent if you learn this move. This is the most important move." And he said he worked for weeks and months and weeks. But he was building esteem again and he was starting to come out, but he still hadn't had that breakthrough moment. So finally, his instructor came and said, "It's time to take you to a tournament." Took him to a tournament at the parents' permission. Put him in the tournament. First round, he won easily. Second round, he went through. It was a little tougher, but he made it. Third round, he almost got defeated, but he finally got through. The fourth round was the finals. Never dreamed that a boy with one arm could go that far. He was so excited, but he was terrified. And he said to his instructor, "I don't know what to do." He said, "You listen to me. At the right moment, you'll hear my voice. And when you hear my voice," he said, "I want you to do what you have worked on and what you have been taught. And that move that you have practiced all of your life now, you practice that move and you use that." He was getting beat horribly, and suddenly he heard the voice of his coach, and he used that one maneuver, and suddenly his opponent was pinned, and he won the championship. They cheered, and everyone was thrilled. He's in the car riding with the coach back home. And he said, Coach, I don't really understand this. How I can only know one move and win the championship. And he said, I thought you'd be asking that. He said, do you realize that the move that you learned, there's only one way to overcome that. When you execute that move, the person to break your ability to pin them has to be able to grab the person by their left arm. He had no way of stopping you. Can I tell you something? The stars might stop shining, but thanks be to God. He knows that He has given us in His book everything that we need, that the devil can't defeat us and the devil can't win. We are the victors, and we find the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. So the choice is yours. You're going to stay pinned down, or you're going to trust Him. Maybe the stars stop shining in your life. It'll shine again, but until then, you got a book. Stay with the book. God will help you. Let's stand together. Howard, come. Get a verse and let's sing together. If you're here today, and maybe you're at a place where you're wondering, what am I going to do? Where am I going to turn? I think every one of us probably has a story in our life that we can tell, but we thought there were times that we couldn't go on and we couldn't make it. And we wouldn't be able to do what we started out to do. But God in His graciousness and goodness has seen through the pain.